Lori, we're back for another episode of the Travel Vertical Podcast. How are you doing today?
Very well. How are you doing, Adam?
You know, I'm doing great. Had a weekend to kind of relax, and I'm ready to get back into it today.
Terrific. Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to tell you about is people profiles. You know, we love finding people within our DMO and e-tourism and destination community who are amazing people. And you know what? I found one.
Well, let's hear it. Who is it?
Well, a gentleman called Mark Romig. Now, if you know Mark, you know him as the Senior Vice President and the Chief Marketing Officer of New Orleans and Company. Okay. But I was reading about Mark because he got the Order of Civil Merit awarded to him by His Majesty King Felipe VI of Spain. And the reason for that was that Mark helped organize the visit, the royal visit to the city of New Orleans for the tricentennial in 2018. So the king has said, here you go. Good job, Mark. But in the process of finding out about Mark's award from the king, I also found out something super interesting. Mark is the voice of the New Orleans Saints.
That's right. That's right. Lori, you know, it's very rare that I hear about something before you bring it to my attention, okay? But I was lucky enough at eTourism Summit in Las Vegas to have Mark appear on the Destination Marketing Podcast while I was there. And he is one of the most fascinating people in the industry that I've met. And I thought it was so cool that the person that's over tourism for a destination is also the voice of the New Orleans Saints. I think that is so awesome.
It is. It's so awesome. So I wrote an article after interviewing Mark, and I put it in the Travel Vertical, the current issue. And I found a video. It's called NFL Network, and it's called The Romig Family, The Heart of the Superdome. Because the thing is, Mark's dad had the job before him. Mark's dad was on the PA system for 446 consecutive games.
Oh my goodness.
Over 44 years. And now his son has taken it over. And on one of his shoulders, he's got his sister working as a spotter. And over his other shoulder, he's got his brother working the scoreboard.
So this is like the royal family of New Orleans down there.
Sure is. Can you believe it?
Oh, that's amazing. How fun. How cool.
So we wrote about Mark. That's in the Travel Vertical. And, you know, I'm looking for our next people profile.
Okay.
So if there's anybody else doing something amazing like that, we're ready. This is so fun.
Hey, Lori, if people want to submit someone to be the next person that you profile, how do they do that?
Oh, just drop me an email. You know, we'll talk on the phone.
Well, let's throw your email out for everybody real quick.
So that's an easy one. Sure. It's Lori, Laurie, @thetravelvertical.com.
Perfect. Make sure you submit because we have so many amazing people in the industry. We should feature more of them here.
Definitely. And then we'll bring them on the show.
That's right.
So we've also got a couple of other amazing people. We've got, you know, we're going to speak with Jim Byers, who's from Canada, a travel writer who's an expert. And we're going to talk about the opening of that border. But as part of the news on that reopening that we all applauded on the 8th of November, I found a couple of other individuals that I've written about who are applauding that opening. One of them is an Elvis tribute artist up in a chapel in Las Vegas. And the other one is Hot Dog King. He's a self-proclaimed Hot Dog King. And his card is outside of the Metropolitan Museum in New York City on Fifth Avenue and 82nd. And they both talk about how important the international visitor is to their job.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you interviewed both of those people.
The Elvis tribute artist and the Hot Dog King.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to read that in the Travel Vertical. So you do a little profile on each one?
Yeah, just a little one. I mean, get to speak to them personally. You know, they're busy, you know, doing Elvis impressions and selling hot dogs. But, you know, it's interesting to see how much people are affected by, you know, the last 18 months and how we're getting out of that that blockade that we've had for the international borders. And that's what we're going to talk about with Jim today.
You know, I'm excited for the conversation with Jim, but going back to these two profiles that you've done, those are two great testaments to how individual people within a destination are so critical to the quality of the visitor experience. And these are, you know, you think a hot dog salesman and an Elvis tribute artist, you know, like those are such, they're small pieces of a trip, but those small moments make or break a trip for a lot of these travelers.
You know, that's right. And this, the chap in Las Vegas, his name is Travis Allen. He's back on the job and he's quite famous as an impersonator. He's one of the best, but he works at the Bliss Wedding Chapel. And he says, now we've got 23 bookings from couples and they're coming from France, Germany, Brazil, the UK. And 2 weeks ago, they had no bookings.
Wow.
So that you know, good news for them.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, the hot dog king, he was selling 500 hot dogs a day. And he said they were not being bought by New Yorkers. They were being bought by international visitors who were going to the Metropolitan Museum. And it fell down to 10 hot dogs a day.
Ugh.
So he needs to work that business back up to 400 to 500 hot dogs a day.
Yeah. Well, what a great way to start by being profiled in the travel vertical, right?
Yeah, that'll do it for him.
At least 11 hot dogs a day now, right?
Yeah. So did you see the two jets at Heathrow that took off simultaneously to mark the occasion?
No.
Yeah, British Airways and Virgin. They each had an A350. They orchestrated the first ever double historic departure for JFK so they could take off and land together. And there's lots of footage of that. I captured one shot, but they were both sold out and they decided to do that as a tribute.
How cool. I'll have to go look at that video on the travel vertical.
Yeah, super cool.
So you had one thing on your list that I wanted to make sure that we hit, and that is Iceland's new Icelandverse parody of Mark Zuckerberg. I thought it was the funniest thing.
Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. I watched it. And I thought, yeah, you know, I don't know that I've seen a more spot on impression of Mark Zuckerberg.
The guy even coated his face with this white grease because there was a famous shot of Zuckerberg wearing this you know, this white mask while he was surfing in Hawaii, you know, where he owns an island or something.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, everybody knows we're talking about Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, right? And everybody knows that their new parent company is called Meta.
Yes.
And everybody knows, or they might not know, but Zuckerberg made the most boring video. It's an hour and 17 minutes long. Who's going to watch that? Explaining how the future is the metaverse and we're all going to be avatars and, you know, live in some pretend world and communicate with each other through, you know, Facebook. Anyway, Iceland just said, hey, how about the real Iceland?
Yeah.
Like we have wet water and we have geysers and we have like mountains and volcanoes and good stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was a great way to take what's currently happening in, you know, we'll call it pop culture and leveraging an event like what Mark Zuckerberg did in that video and leveraging that into generating interest for your destination. I thought it was a really fascinating thing that they did and they made it funny. I mean, it was... Uh-huh. It was so spot on as far as the impersonation goes. And then when he had the mask on, he's in the hot tub and he said, and there's real people here. And he looks at the other lady in the hot tub and he's like, you're real, right? And she goes, yeah. And he's like, isn't she funny? It was so well done. It was so well done.
He's a great actor. But anyway, if you know, Iceland is good at this. It's not their first tongue-in-cheek attempt. And that whole process of, you know, getting onto something like this, doing it super fast and coming up with, you know, the counterpart parody. It's called newsjacking. It's
yeah.
a thing.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's a great thing. But when a tourism destination can do it, you know, and not just get all befuddled about, you know, being proper and so on. It's fantastic. And even their head of tourism at Iceland has gone on LinkedIn and poked some more fun. So they've got the sense of humor and it's just a delight.
So great. So on brand.
I love it.
Well, anything else, Lori? I think there was one more campaign that you found interesting you wanted to just briefly touch on.
Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, talking about tongue-in-cheek, there is a place called Treasure Coast.
Yes.
In Florida. And they've come out with an intentionally snarky tagline.
Well, tell me about it.
It's called Don't Come Here. So, you know, you want to click on Don't Come Here and find out why Florida's Treasure Coast has gone out with a marketing message like that. And you'll see. But, you know, it takes some nerve, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you know, at face value, without seeing the tongue-in-cheek direction that they've taken there, my first reaction would be, well, that's not a fantastic tourism message, but I would imagine that in the execution is where you find the brilliance.
That's right. You know, we always run examples of these when we find them, and we have found them in Sweden, and we have found them in Iceland, and once in a while we find them in the USA, but not too often.
Yeah.
And we did find it in Winnipeg.
Well, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to go click on it and read about it. But I think that's a great cliffhanger to leave people with. I know we always like to talk jobs. Is there any jobs that stand out to you that you wanted to mention today?
So, yes, this week and last week, lots of jobs. We have some CEO ones that we talked about in the previous edition of the Travel Vertical podcast. And now we've got some more, like Visit California. 10 jobs just in Visit California.
Wow.
There's a marketing manager job opportunity at the Travel Nevada. And there are, hey, anybody want to live in Puerto Rico? And there's 5 jobs at Discover Puerto Rico based in San Juan, including a market research analyst, a group marketing manager.
It could say front desk associate and I'm in.
Oh, right. Me too. Hey, how about a digital marketing manager at Colorado Tourism?
These are some good jobs, Lori.
How about a director of marketing? You want to be a director of marketing? You can go to Visit Reno Tahoe, or you can apply to Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau. You can apply to Visit Annapolis in Maryland, Destination Sturgeon Bay up in Wisconsin, Destination El Paso. Those are all director of marketing jobs, as well as CMO at Santa Monica, California.
Yeah, that one's been open for a little bit, hasn't it?
Yep. They're looking for a vice president of marketing and communications in Visit Milwaukee, also at Destination Greater Victoria in British Columbia, and at Visit Denver. And we did talk about Savannah,
yeah,
which is still open as far as we know.
Well, interesting stuff. So if you're looking, every week it seems like we've got a bunch of new postings in there. So make sure you go check it out. I think it's guest time, Lori.
Jim Byers is here, and we thought it was about time to talk about Canada. With everything that happened on November 8th and the reopening of the northern border, it's just so terrifically important to so many of the DMOs in the USA and also on the other side. So we don't consider that a hard stop border. And we really do want to talk about what's been going on and what's going to happen now. And, you know, it's our number one international market. Hi, Jim. Nice to see you.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Nice to talk to you, Lori.
Yeah. Welcome, Jim. We're excited to talk to you.
You're the expert. I follow you and love reading everything that you're explaining to us about what's going on up in, you're in Toronto, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So tell us what you think now about how things are going to change.
Yeah, you know, it was so long, and it was the longest time. I mean, personally, I grew up in the Bay Area and San Francisco area, and, you know, my dad could have come at some point, but it was very difficult, and there was the whole lack of vaccination sort of thing. So, you know, I feel I was reporting on this not only from a professional standpoint, Lori and Adam, but also from a personal standpoint. You know, I was longest I'd ever been away from my family in the 40 years that I'd been in Toronto. So that was it was a real hardship for a lot of people. And don't forget, you know, there are so many families with just, you know, their cousin, their uncle, their brother is across the border, sometimes literally a mile away, but across the Niagara River, across Detroit to Windsor, you know, Bellingham to Vancouver, whatever it may be. So this was a real hardship, not only from a tourism and travel standpoint, but from a purely personal standpoint. So when it was finally allowed, and for some reason, and don't ask me why, but for some reason, throughout the pandemic, Canadians were allowed to fly to the United States. they just couldn't drive to the United States. And I'm not quite sure. Sounds like a Seinfeld episode. They just couldn't drive to the United States. And so that was a real problem. Finally, on November 8th, the U.S. allowed not only more air visitors from other countries of the world, I think maybe 33, something like that, 36, but also for Canadians to drive over with proof of vaccination. So, you know, people were lining up. There were folks parked in RV parks or at the side of the, literally at the side of the road in Alberta and other provinces, just itching to get over and get down to, you know, California, Florida, Texas, Arizona, all of those Sun Belt, snowbird kind of states. So it was a huge thing.
Yeah, Jim, one thing we've seen in the U.S. when things started to open up, especially, you know, kind of mid last year, we saw a real pent up demand and we saw a pretty significant increase, especially in outdoor destinations of tourism. And I'm wondering, what do you see as the amount of pent up demand in Canada for that international border crossing that we're talking about?
Into the U.S., you mean?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, from Canada, I mean, it's immense. A lot of Canadians are pretty content. We have lovely summers and nice fall, so most of us are pretty content to stay close to home for the most part of the year. But by the time, you know, Canadian Thanksgiving is in early October, Columbus Day weekend, by the time that rolls around is traditionally when a lot of Canadians are like, okay, I'm done. No snow for me. I've had enough. I'm heading south. So, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands, if not millions of Canadians every year are traveling to the U.S. A lot of that travel does begin November, December, especially January, February. People go down, they've got the same condos that have been in the family for 40, 50, 80 years, the same properties that they go to all the time. And you're right, you talked about the outdoor things, and some of this is outdoors, and a lot of it is in other states as well. It's South Carolina, it's Utah, New Mexico, Washington, New York, Chicago, in terms of cities. So there's just a huge, huge pent-up demand for Canadians to go. And, you know, we love Broadway shows as much as Americans do. And we love shopping on the Magnificent Mile in Chicago, just like anybody else, or going to the museum or going to a Cubs game. So, you know, the cities will benefit as well. But I think you're right, Adam. A lot of this will probably benefit a little bit more of those outdoorsy sort of places that people got familiar with during the pandemic.
What's the exchange rate like, Jim, for Canadians coming in?
Yeah, it's pretty typical right now, Laurie. It's about 20% that we lose on the exchange. For us, that's kind of the cost of doing business. It really only becomes a big factor for Canadians when it dips down to 25 or 30, because then you start thinking, whoa, this is really bad. Now, you know, don't forget, Canada taxes are much higher here than they are in most parts of the United States. So even with a 20% exchange, I can probably buy a gallon of milk cheaper in Florida than I can in Toronto. So we don't worry about the 15, 20, maybe even 25. If it gets to 30 or 35, we start thinking about it, especially if you're going to a higher end, more expensive destination, you know, a hotel in New York City, maybe a flight to Hawaii where, you know, groceries are expensive anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, here in the United States, a lot of travelers are watching inflation very closely and the inflation that's happening here in the U.S. And I think it's affecting travel plans. My question is, how closely do you feel like Canadians are tracking that same metric of inflation here in the U.S. to decide whether or not to make the trip?
Yeah, I think they're really, Adam, really looking more at right now, it's just groceries. I mean, there was a story in one of the newspapers this morning in Toronto about, you know, the price of meat being up 10, 12% and some products being up 15 or even 18%, depends on what you're shopping for. I don't think many Canadians, you know, there's so many of us, and I'm Canadian and American, so I'll speak as Canadian. So many of us, we're just wedded to these places that we go to in the United States. And I think for the, maybe a casual traveler might say to themselves, you know, New York hotel prices have gone up. But I think for the most part, there are just so many people north of the border that just love this state or this hotel or this golf course. And I don't think, you know, a small inflationary issue is going to cause a lot of trouble. I mean, don't forget, even with climate change, winters can be a little chilly up here. And a lot of Canadians, you know, we're just wedded to that condo or that beach or what have you in the sunnier parts of the U.S. So I really don't think the inflation thing, unless it spirals completely out of control, will be a huge factor. But, you know, air travel is more expensive. I think car rental prices seem to have come down from the stratosphere to just the lower stratosphere. So that's a little bit better. But, you know, flights still up up here are pretty expensive. And the good thing is, if you're in the U.S., is there's still a reasonable amount of competition. There's new flights being announced every day. In the last couple of days, Swoop Airlines, which is a ultra-low-cost airline based in Edmonton, Alberta, announced new flights to Palm Springs. So I think the demand is still going to be there.
You know, Jim, the other thing that Canada's been in the news throughout the pandemic for something else, and I'm just wondering what you think about it. It's the whole issue of the cruises, you know, and all that traffic being stopped up to Alaska and up through New England because of the situation, you know, where those cruise lines couldn't go through Canadian waters.
Right. No, it's a big problem, Lori, especially for Victoria and Vancouver rely a lot on those cruise ships coming in on their way to Alaska. It's a complicated thing, and maybe some of the people who are listening understand this, but there's these strange laws in the U.S. called cabotage laws. And basically it says that an international carrier, if it leaves the United States, it has to go to an international destination before it returns to the United States. So what happens is those cruises from Seattle to Alaska and back have to, by law, under the current laws, stop somewhere else. Well, of course, the place they're going to stop is Victoria, Vancouver. They're not going to sail to Russia or someplace. So the Alaska cruises have always been depositing thousands and thousands of visitors in downtown Vancouver and Victoria to get pictures of the Empress Hotel and the mountains and the whole bit. So that came to a grinding halt when Canada closed its waters to large cruise ships. Ditto on a smaller level for Montreal, for Quebec City. And you mentioned the Canadian Maritimes. That's a big issue with Halifax, Charlottetown, and Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland as well. So without those ships stopping in Canada, it was a big deal. And there's some legitimate concern now. There's an I think he's actually from Utah, if I'm not mistaken, maybe Idaho, but there is a senator from the Western U.S., a landlocked state, who is sponsoring a bill to try to get rid of that law that requires a U.S. ship to go to international waters before it returns. Canadians fighting pretty hard on this one, because that would be utter disaster for a lot of those port cities in Canada. So that's something that the Canadians are very much keeping an eye on, trying to argue that. But it's kind of a tricky thing, because, I mean, given protectionism that does exist in the U.S. and companies suffering, you know, I think a lot of them are thinking, well, why are you forcing me to stop in Canada and, you know, disgorge thousands of passengers? We could give them an extra day in Spokane. Well, not Spokane, because it didn't, but in Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or someplace. So I think the Canadian government's got a bit of an uphill battle on that front. It's going to be interesting to watch.
I read that you, in one of your columns, Jim, you've got a new minister of tourism, don't you?
Yeah, which is good. We've a fellow from who's actually from Edmonton, which I mentioned a few minutes ago. You know, tourism, I find, in Canada has never really been given its due. I mean, if you look around the world and within Canada, tourism is responsible for roughly 1 in 10 jobs. It's vastly important. And, you know, it's not just, you know, I like to tell people when I talk about this, you know, I think sometimes the average person, Laurie and Adam, might think, oh, well, you know, people aren't traveling. It's just the guy who owns the Hyatt Hotel in downtown Atlanta. He's not making any money. Well, yeah, that's true. And maybe that's a large corporation that owns that particular hotel. But who's working there? You know, who's the concierge? And he's got a family. And the people doing the hotel cleaning have families. And the valets have families. And the bellmen have families. So, and don't forget also the mom and pop operations. You know, there's small tours that take place from coast to coast to coast in the United States and in Canada. A lot of them are just family run, mom and pop kind of places. And they're suffering very badly from the lack of international tourism. So it's not just big corporations that are suffering in this. It's everyday folks all around the United States, Canada, and around the world.
Well, it looked like your guy, your minister of tourism in Edmonton, is going to have someone to talk to, because the news today out of here, out of the States, is that there's going to be a new minister of transport, if you will, for the USA within the DOT. So that's today's news. They can talk to each other.
Good. Yeah, it would be nice, because I think the previous ones, they've never really had a whole lot of clout, to be honest. They've always been fairly junior ministers. But at this point, I think it's going to be a little bit better. I think he's also either deputy or involved with the Ministry of Finance, which is obviously where the money comes from. And if he's got the confidence of Prime Minister Trudeau, and he seems to, he's from a key province of Alberta. It's not an area where Trudeau has been particularly strong over the years. The Liberal government in general has not done very well in oil-rich Alberta. That's another story. So I think if he can pump up the new tourism minister, I think it's going to go a little ways and hopefully a long ways to helping improve the response to tourism and travel across Canada.
I say we get both of them on the show and let them kind of hash out the improvements they need to make right here on the Travel Vertical podcast.
Hey, I like it. I'll see what I can do. Yeah. I have zero clout, but I'll see what I can do.
Well, and Jim, on a serious note, though, it sounds to me like, other than this cruise issue that Lori mentioned, it sounds like there's a lot of reason for optimism on both sides of the border that some of these numbers, these travel numbers, are going to increase going both ways. And the question is going to be timing, I think. And you mentioned some key times that Canadians are more likely to head south. And my guess is it's probably opposite for going the other direction from the United States up to Canada in the summertime. So I think there's, like I said, a lot of reason to be optimistic. Would you agree with that? Or is there any other concerns you have that we haven't discussed?
No, I think the one thing you always have to keep in mind, and you know, Canada in some ways is a much more liberal country in terms of government issues, healthcare, taxes. You know, it's a different kind of place in that way, much more like a New York City or a San Francisco, sort of a liberal attitude towards government. And, you know, big government is not necessarily seen as a bad thing. On the other hand, we're socially a little bit more conservative when it comes to risk taking. And Canadians, by and large, all of the stories and surveys that I see from Longwords International will do studies, and then a Canadian company will do a study. And every time I look at it, it seems to me that if 40% of Americans are reticent about traveling somewhere, it's 50% of Canadians. And if 80% of Americans are gung-ho and they're going to hop on the next plane that they can, it's probably 68 to 70% of Canadians. So there is a bit of a lag factor here, even though we have a higher vaccination rate than in most parts of the United States. So we are just a little bit more cautious and conservative when it comes to risk taking in general, I find. So I think the travel rebound will be a little bit slower, but it's starting to pick up already. I've noticed that the couple flights that I've had, the flight I had to California a couple weeks ago from Toronto was pretty full. I'm going again in a couple of days. That flight looks to be pretty full. Now, obviously, there's not as many planes flying as there used to be. Some of them are a little bit smaller, but there's a lot of people lining up at U.S. Customs every morning in Toronto and the other airports. It is coming back. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, Lori and Adam, as soon as those first snowflakes fly, I think a lot of that reticence is going to go out the window. And Canadians are going to be like, yeah, you know, maybe there's a little bit of COVID going around, but our vaccination rates are pretty good. And dang it, I'm cold. I'm heading to Florida. Florida, Arizona, here we come. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, do Texas, and California is a little bit more expensive. But there are a lot of Canadians, you know, it is kind of a north-south thing. A lot of people from Quebec sort of tend to go to the Atlantic coast of Canada. A lot of Canadians, and there are people from Ontario, and there are obviously differences and some exceptions. But a lot of Ontario folks seem to head to some of the Atlantic, but a lot to the Gulf Coast side of Florida. Folks in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, some of the central provinces, will do Florida or Arizona or Texas, because that's kind of a straight shot down around Corpus Christi and those areas in southern Texas. And then, you know, a lot of people try to get to California, Hawaii, and Arizona and New Mexico if you can manage that too. So.
Yeah, well, the lack of Canadian visitation has been, you know, truly, it's been a big hit for, you know, for the border states and for the sunshine states that you mentioned as well. So we're going to keep an eye on this. It is our number one international market.
Yeah.
And we'll have you back and we'll find out how that's going.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, a lot of those border cities have suffered. And right now there's a whole testing thing that we didn't even get into, because Canadians or anybody coming into Canada right now still has to take a full PCR test. Now, there have been a number of stories lately where people are finding places in the U.S. to get tested for free. But if you can't find that or aren't sure, you might be spending $200. So that's a real problem for Canadians wanting to take a short trip into the United States, maybe not for 6 months, but for the shorter trips. But you're right, it's the border cities, the Buffaloes, Bellingham and Seattle, places like that, border cities even in Minnesota, Maine and Vermont that have really had problems. And the same thing for the cities that are close to the U.S. border in Canada, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, some of those cities. So yeah. I think it's going to take a little while for us to get there, but it's starting, and it's really great to see.
So the main thing that's gone is the quarantine. That's the main thing that changed.
Mandatory quarantine is gone. If you're doubly vaccinated coming into Canada, you've got your test. There's no need to quarantine. You might get randomly tested, which I have been the last couple times. If you did test positive, you would have to go in quarantine. But that's not really been an issue for very many people. At least coming for Canadians going to the U.S., we're a little bit luckier in that we only need the rapid antigen tests. Those are only about $30 or $40. So that's a lot cheaper than the PCR tests. So right now it's easier for Canadians to drive or go into the US than it is for Americans to come into Canada. So that's something that the Canadian destinations are certainly hoping is going to change soon.
Well, Jim, you've obviously got a great pulse on what's happening at the border on the northern side for us and southern side for you. And we really appreciate you coming by to share with us kind of what you're seeing. If people want to continue to hear what you've got to say about what's happening on both sides of the border and how it's affecting travel, where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, to reach me on my the website is www.jimbyers.com. So www.jimbyerstravel.com. And also on Twitter at Jim Byers Travel is probably my main social media thing. I use the other ones, but I'm an old news guy for 40 years. So I like Twitter quite a lot for breaking news. So that's probably the two main places and, you know, some other freelance things. But for the most part, when it comes to news, it's the website that I try to keep up with.
Great. Jim, it's been fantastic to have you on. Really appreciate you coming by. Lori mentioned we should have you again. I would love to do that. And everybody needs to go to jimbyerstravel.com to continue to hear the latest coming out of Canada.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Well, Lori, we had a great guest today, a great show, and thank you so much. I always love being able to kind of share the news for the industry here, and you do such a great job of curating it and putting it all together for us.
Well, thanks, Adam. We were really happy to talk about Canada. It's so important to inbound U.S. travel and vice versa, as he pointed out.
Yes, great to get that going again. All right. Well, good stuff, Lori. We'll talk to you soon. And everybody out there listening, stick with us and make sure that you check out thetravelvertical.com.
Thanks, Adam.